House Education and Finance Committee will come to order. Thank you all. Let's go ahead and get the minutes taken care of. And Representative Anzels, would you like to move the minutes from the March 17th?
I so do. So moved.
All right. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes of March 17th, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you very much, Representative Anzels. And with that, I think we'll just go ahead and roll into the bill. So, Representative Anderson, would you mind taking the chair? And I'm going to present my bill first, if that's all right with you.
Chair Lewd, would you care to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would. I would move House File 720 to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
We will hear the bill, and chairs intend to lay the bill over, eventually go to taxes. And also, is there an amendment, Madam Chair?
I do have an amendment, and I'm going to, if Mr. Strom could explain it, it's purely a technical cleanup amendment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, the A1 amendment just puts a sentence back, a clause back into the statute that you're amending that was inadvertently deleted in the 2013 bill, unrelated to the substance of Representative Loon's change, but related to the language in front of us.
Thank you. Any questions on the A1 amendment? If not, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Approved, same sign. The amendment is approved. Chair Loon, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members. Well, my bill really is pretty simple. What it does is it repeals the student achievement levy that was put in place in 2013. And I think we'll have some testimony sort of to the historical nature, but if members will recall, and whether you were in this body or perhaps on school boards or just in your communities, but back in 2001, there was a significant change to school funding in the state of Minnesota, and the general education levy, as it was then called, was replaced. And since that time, I mean, there were some other tax provisions and that put into place with regards to the statewide commercial industrial property tax that affects CI businesses and also cabin owners that goes into the general fund. And the inflationary factor on that tax was supposed to go into education. It has not. But that was the sort of bargain that was struck at the time. And then, again, 2 years ago, a new, really statewide levy, renamed the Student Achievement Levy, was put into place. It's fairly small at this point, but in order to try to, again, keep, I think, the deal or the bargain that was struck back when that significant change in school funding was made in 2001, as well as offering some local property tax relief to our locals, I would propose 720. So with that, I would offer up time to any testifiers who would like to come forward, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have any questions from members, first of all? Not anybody from the audience who would care to testify? Welcome. State your name and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. And thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of House File 720. We'd like to thank Representative Loon for being the author. As usual, Mr. Strom's summary provides a great history of the general education levy, its repeal in 2001, and its recreation in 2013. That said, there's one piece of additional history that should be added, as referred by Representative Loon. It's that when the general ed levy was repealed in 2001, the legislature created a new statewide levy. This new statewide levy generated almost $600 million exclusively from commercial and industrial property, as well as seasonal recreation property. In short, employers agreed to a trade-off with the 2001 reforms, some property tax relief with the repeal of the gen ed levy in exchange for a new $600 million statewide levy, and some measure of simplification in K-12 funding. Repealing the gen ed levy meant the state would fully fund the basic formula allowance. No longer would this be a mix of state aid and local levies. For homeowners and people in general, at least basic funding for schools was now easy to understand. The state pays. Meanwhile, school districts have argued that the general ed levy is needed because it provides stability in funding, allowing districts to rely less on referendum levies. I think in your packet you should have a sheet that looks like this with a couple charts front and back. On the front, at the top, it says K-12 operating referendums. As you get a chance to look at that top chart, you'll see from 1986 to 2002, the percent of districts with a referendum levy steadily increased with no correlation to state funding levels. Then, with the repeal of the gen ed levy in 2001, you can see that levies went down for a bit. However, in 2001, after the legislature adjourned, it was also the year when 197 districts proposed 207 referendum questions. In 2002, there were 111 proposals. In 2003, another 117 proposed referendums. Not surprisingly, levies went up. And this is highlighted on the back page in the bottom corner. On the positive side, however, at least local voters had a say in deciding if their property taxes would increase. Two other changes have happened that support House File 720 and the repeal of the student achievement or general education levy. Again, as Representative Loon referenced, in 2013 and 14, the legislature passed and expanded the local option revenue, which allows school boards to convert voter-approved referendum revenue to board-controlled revenue. The legislature also gave districts with $300 per pupil or less in referendum dollars the ability to raise that amount, also without local voter approval. Frankly, there was a case to be made for doing something for districts without a referendum, and we're not going to reopen discussions about the location equity or local option revenue. The point is, these two changes now give school boards control over a substantial amount of local levies that used to be decided by voters. Added to the fact that the statewide levy, created in 2001, now generates nearly $850 million a year, repealing the student achievement or gen ed levy is the right thing to do, if for no other reason than to be clear about who pays for basic school funding. Thank you, and we'd ask that you support House File 720.
Question from Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Bartholomew, I mean, some of the correlations you make here simply are not accurate. When the general fund levy was taken, that was $1.3 billion a year. Mm-hmm. The business statewide property tax was not added to replace that. That was done in conference committee primarily because when business property tax classification went from about 3.4% down to about 2.0%. I don't know if there's any. And when we looked at the runs back in 2001 with that reform, businesses would have seen this huge, huge property tax decrease. And so bipartisanly, Chair Abrams was in House tax chair, and I can't remember in the Senate, was it, wasn't Rep. Senator, oh, probably Senator Pogamiller, I don't remember, or it could have been Johnson, but they looked at that and decided, okay, we're going to do this. But it, in fact, Governor Ventura at the time had a solution to fill the $1.3 billion, and that was he did a lot of things with sales tax. putting on services and so forth. He had a plan, actually, to cover it. But, of course, bipartisanly, we wouldn't do that. So that wasn't added for that. I mean, there isn't a correlation there. And initially, I think it was about $550 million, which wouldn't even cover half of what the general fund levy or the general ed levy was doing. And then at that time, also on the business statewide business tax, whatever was inflated each year was supposed to go to education. And so for about the first few years, there's about $15,000 that was inflated that was supposed to be reserved for education. Then we went into a budget deficit. We just took that out of there. Also, when you're talking about some of these referendums initially going down, also part of the 2001 education bill is, I think, Mr. Strom can correct me, but I think wasn't there a $415 referendum basically kind of takeover, which provided either new revenue or I forget how that worked, but I think maybe Mr. Strom could talk to that, but that would have, I think, driven down the need for referendums for a while there. So, I'm not going to argue the fact of whether or not we need the student education levy or not, but for you to assume that this business-wide tax was added to replace that, that wasn't the reason for that at all. And I think if there's anyone around who was on that tax conference committee at the time or involved with that, they can correct me, but we never did replace the $1.3 billion. And the reason all these referendums went up, and I don't think I haven't had time to look at this thing that you have here, but nowhere in here does it mention how over 10 years of time, we funded education much below inflation. And that doesn't seem to be mentioned here. And that's when you saw from basically 2001 to payable 2002, property taxes on schools went from about $2 billion down to $1 billion. And it only took about 8 or 9 years to bring those levies right back up to $2 billion. And mainly because, for one thing, we weren't funding education at the level it should have. And it forced districts to go to the taxpayers rather than a general fund, the taxpayer, to just fill everyday needs. And then one last point, and if you've got rural members around this table, when Mr. Bartholomew talks about the $300, that first $300. When we looked at that, there were 37 school districts in the state that had zero referendum, 37 school districts. And the average referendum per pupil around the state was about $1,000. And you had 37 districts with zero. Every single one of those school districts from rural Minnesota. And so, rural members here, you can talk about, if you want, taking the right of voters away. But I think the bottom line for rural Minnesota should be, it shouldn't be the kids that suffer when you have an inequity. And that's the problem we solved. And the Department of Education report, when it shows on disparity, because of also the practices of 10 years prior to the last couple years, the disparity between the wealthiest 5th percentile and 95th percentile went up from 18% gap to 31% gap, an increase of 67%. In the last 2 years, we cut that back to 18%, cut it by a third because of some of these things that Mr. Bartholomew is now making statements against. So I just think for those who want parity between school districts, and some of these other things, some of those things, even the student achievement levy, even though it's not making much of a difference, helps do some of those things. But I just thought your testimony here, especially dealing with the business property tax, just wasn't accurate. It just was not related to the school general ed levy.
Mr. Bartholomew.
Mr. Chair, Representative Marquardt, I hesitate to get into an argument with the former chair of, I think, K-12 finance at one point, as well as property taxes. But part of the deal in 2001 was with the statewide business property tax, as you said, most other property tax properties ended up with between 15 and 20% reductions in property tax. With the statewide business property tax, commercial industrial ended up with about a 10% reduction. And that was fine, because again, 10% was pretty good. It did the reclassification. And we also were supportive of the simplification to some degree in K-12 funding. So there were a million different issues going on at the time, but I think the net result is with the statewide business property tax, CI property got less of a reduction in property taxes than I think any other kind of type of property in the state. And again, we were fine with where it ended up. In regard to dollars for levies, I think, you know, this on the back side, this chart, the number of referendum requests by year, and I put in red the three highest years in state history, 2001, 2002, 2003, the year the gen ed levy was repealed, and the two subsequent years afterwards, where the state bought down property taxes significantly. And I've got newspaper articles that talk about, go ahead, pass a levy, whether it was city, county, or school district, because you can get that extra revenue, and your taxpayers are still going to get a cut. So it was a heck of a deal at the time. But unfortunately, as you know, districts, when they pass a referendum, many of them will build it into their base. So when it comes due in 3, 5, and 10 years, you know, in 2011, 2012, 2013, they have a referendum that they have to pass again. And we're not opposed to that, but it's just, you know, there are lots of reasons for districts having referendums. And again, on the $300 proposal that was passed in 2013, We recognized that there was something that needed to be done, and frankly, we had less of a concern with that than what was happening with the location equity and just pulling that out of the referendum. And I think, as you know, through the years since 2001, we've talked with you about, you know, if you have extra funding like you perhaps did in 2007, some of that could have gone for better equalization rather than letting that gap get exacerbated as well. So this is not an easy topic by any stretch, and there are lots of reasons for referendums and tax policies that the state does. But we think Representative Loon has an excellent bill to get us back into good faith with the reforms previously. It does provide some property tax relief, and it does make school funding a little bit more understandable for the common person.
We do have a property tax expert among us today, Mr. Hines. If anybody would have a question as to what happened when back in the early 2000s, would you care to have a recap of what happened? Yeah. Representative Mark Warren.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I did not see Mr. Hines over there. I was looking for him and didn't see him, so my apologies. We did have a few experts for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions? Representative Murphy.
Yes, since Mr. Hines is here, then, and or Mr. Bartholomew, Mr. Bartholomew or Mr. Hines, what will happen if Representative Loon's 720 passes?
Who wants to tackle that one, Mr. Bartholomew?
I'll try it. From our perspective, there'll be $20 million in property tax relief for property taxpayers. And the basic formula allowance will be fully funded by the state, making it easier for Minnesotans to understand at least that element of school funding.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Bartholomew, we have a printout that shows some dollars and the tax savings. But in your remarks, you were talking about referendum and the voters voting, and you were talking about local school board decisions. And I got the impression that you were saying that voters voting was better than the local school board decision-making. Is that correct?
Mr. Bartholomew.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, in the case of referendums, yes. And with the understanding, that referendums are in addition to funding formulas driven by the legislature and the state.
Representative Murphy?
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Bartholomew, you're saying that the local school boards don't have the insight in their community of whether a levy would be welcomed or not.
Mr. Bartholomew.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I think the thing to remember is that the process of having a referendum is a wonderful opportunity for the school district, the school board, to have a conversation with its community and voters about where they are, what they need, why they'd like the additional funding, and what would it go for. And then for after that conversation, the voters to have the opportunity to weigh in and say, we agree or we don't. But it's that community conversation that occurs during a referendum that's very valuable.
And Representative Murphy?
And Mr. Chair, if the 7720 was not included in the bills that passed this year, then we would have what the people had voted up for in the first place, wouldn't we, in place, or am I wrong?
Mr. Bartholomew. Mr. Strom is here, too, who could answer that possibly. do you want to go ahead?
If 720 is not adopted, you'll have $20 million in property taxes that the state required to be levied as opposed to local voters. In fact, there's a penalty. If a school district chooses not to levy the appropriate amount of this levy, their state aid is proportionally reduced.
Subtracted.
Okay. Mr. Strom, would you care to add anything to that? Representative Murphy,
Mr. Strom or Mr. Hines, Mr. Chair, is the $20 million that would be saved in property tax payments, is that divided then among all the classifications, the property owners and the business owners and the big business owners of the property and the cabin owners and the household owners? Is that $20 million divided among all of those across the state?
Mr. Strom.
Representative Murphy, yes, this is a levy on net tax capacity, and so it includes all of the classes of property that are otherwise subject to taxation. So it includes those that are excluded under referendum market value, like ag lands and seasonal rec property. But it includes all the classes of property, residential, non-residential, seasonal rec, commercial, industrial, and ag.
And
Representative Murphy.
And Mr. Strom, who would gain the most? John and Mary Doe and Aunt Susan that own a house in the school district?
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, it's a flat rate based on the tax capacity of each piece of property, of each parcel. So regardless where the property's located, it's a flat rate against the value of that property with the class rates assigned to it. So the larger one's net tax capacity on an individual parcel of property, the larger the dollar value. But as a rate, the rate is the same, essentially, against all classes of property. Remember, as Representative Marquardt was talking about a few minutes ago, there are class rates. So the commercial industrial property generally has a class rate of 2%, the homes a 1%. So a similar market value property, the commercial industrial property, because of the class rates, would have the largest savings per dollar of market value.
Thank you,
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Strom, and I noticed that by this printout that you gave me that I would have a savings of $3.27. And gosh, I wonder how I'll spend that.
Was that a
There's
question
so
or
many
comment?
Choices, Representative Erickson. It's just Sunday at Bridgman's, or oh no, it's not enough. Gosh. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Further questions from committee members or anybody in the audience, for or against? Any final comments, Chair Lewin?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, I think the discussion was very helpful in terms of looking, you know, historically what has happened in that. And you know, Representative Murphy, you're correct. At this point, you know, the levy isn't a lot of money for most taxpayers in that. But again, reinstituting this levy at a low level, I would suggest history may show that it will continue to grow. I do think that our basic funding for the schools, you know, the state had made a decision that most of that should come from the state, and that, you know, additional funds that would flow through a referendum and levy would be at a local level with the decision of the local school board and the agreement by the local taxpayer. So, you know, it's my intention as well, just so committee members know, I have not received a target yet, if anyone's wondering, but would be that this may find its way into the omnibus bill only if I have the money to pay for it. So with that, I would appreciate committee members' support and just would renew my motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
I have one more question for Representative Loon. I know that you talked to a lot more people that came knocking for appointments than I did. Was this on the groups, the education groups that were wanting changes, was this on their list?
Chair Loon?
Was this on the School Boards Association list and the Chamber of Commerce list and all those other the other groups that have come before us? I don't remember them talking about this, but I probably wouldn't have remembered it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy. This is on my list. This is something that I would like to do. And like I said, I've had many meetings with many, many groups and individual districts. This may have come up in a couple of meetings or two, but you know, this is more something that is on my personal list to do this year.
See no further questions. The bill will eventually move to taxes, but it's the chair's intent to lay it over. Thank you. Next bill on the agenda, House File 596, Representative Drazkowski.
Welcome, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And you are here, let's see, I have House File 596. Is that the one we're going to start with?
It is.
All right. So I would move that House File 596 be re-referred to taxes, but it is my intent to lay it over for today. And with that, do you have an amendment?
I do, Madam Chair. I've got an A2 amendment I'm digging for, but I expect the committee's got it.
All right, so let me get my packet here. Thank you.
And there's an accompanying spreadsheet with the two, Madam Chair.
All right, so shall we have... Okay, so the A2 amendment members should be in your packet. And Representative Drazkowski, do you want to describe it, or should we have Mr. Strom or Mr. Hines go over that?
Could I describe the bill, Madam Chair, and kind of the effort behind it, and then maybe Mr. Hines and or Mr. Strom could describe the amendment?
That would be fine. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 596 is a bill that has been called the House Garage and an Acre Bill. and we have also referred to it as the Family Farm Protection Act. I have become aware of, over the last few years, especially the last year, with the rising property taxes in Minnesota, been hearing a lot, especially from the farm families in my district and surrounding districts, about the exacerbation of the burden of property taxes that they are paying in their local communities. And this is especially the case when we look at school districts and construction levies. And so what this bill intended to do, Madam Chair, was to bring the construction levies for schools and counties and cities as well to a referendum market value base instead of a net tax capacity base, which would treat them very similarly to the way the operating levies are now for schools. And that was really passed back in, I think it was maybe Staff Canal 2001 or sometime in that time frame, when the house garage and acre debate happened here at the Capitol and it was applied to operating levies for schools. Since session opened, Madam Chair, members, I have been with the Property Tax Committee to two locations, and then on my own to, I think, another 10 or 11 locations throughout the state doing listening sessions about property taxes. And there's three things that have come up. The top of the list has been the impact of agricultural income property taxes on families. And the other two have been business taxes and overall local government spending and how in its contribution to the increase in property taxes. So those are the three things we've heard of. But among those three things, the thing that the topic that is brought up most often and most passionately is the impact that property taxes are having on our farm families, and especially those that carry substantial amounts of farm acreage. And so this bill attempts to address that and start to bring some equity or some fairness to the construction levies across these three units of government, especially as we know this is an issue with school governments and school construction projects throughout the state. So this is the bill. The bill, again, is to move it from net tax capacity to referendum market value. And then we also have an amendment. I've been meeting, Madam Chair, with the author of the bill in the Senate, Senator Coonan, and also with our smart people from upstairs, two of which are here with us today, and also with the education finance folks from the school boards, the SEE group, and the Minnesota Rural Education Association, in trying to work towards something that is palatable, that works, and that we can have comfort moving forward. And I'm hopeful, Madam Chair, that that might be represented in the A2 amendment, of which, as I pointed out to members, there's a spreadsheet to go with that as well. And maybe Mr. Strom and or Mr. Hines could elaborate more, Madam Chair, on the A2 amendment and how it changed from the original bill. I know one thing we did is we moved to a hybrid that includes half referendum market value and half net tax capacity, and that's the basis of the amendment. And then we changed, and you'll have to ask Mr. Strom, because he's in his computer a lot lately, how the debt equity aid formula has been changed in order to accomplish what's in the spreadsheet. And we're still waiting on the fiscal note from the department. We thought we might get it today to tell us exactly what this would cost in terms of additional debt equity aid in order to make these numbers true within the spreadsheet, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. Mr. Strom, do you want to, or Mr. Hines, whoever, do you want to kind of walk through what the amendment does and describe its impact? If you want to, does it relate to the spreadsheet?
It does, okay. Madam Chair. And again, I'm Steve Hines from House Research, just to get on the record. The A2 amendment, as Representative Drazkowski alluded to, changes the initial the bill as introduced, which would have required building levies to be totally levied from this point forward on referendum market value rather than net tax capacity, and instead changes the bill so that the any new building levies would go 50-50, half against net tax capacity and half against referendum market value. So kind of cutting it right down the middle between the two different tax bases that we have available to us. And then in addition, after some looking at alternatives, we made the equalization aid formula in the original bill somewhat more generous in this amendment than in the original bill. So this is the part of the equalization aid formula that supplies aid really for the referendum market value side of the equation on the levy versus equalization aid. And in the printout that's been referenced, and it's the one that down in the lower corner, it says House Research 312-2015. The title is Tax Impacts of a Hypothetical $20 Million Bond Referendum. And it shows for three different kinds of properties, a $125,000 homestead, a farm valued with ag land of about $1.8 million and a $125,000 house, and a $500,000 business property. It shows what the impact would be of this hypothetical bond referendum under current law versus the original House File 596, and then the House File 596 with the A2 amendment, which is in the middle of the three columns. So you'll see that sort of in all cases the effect of the big difference between current law and House File 596 is introduced as sort of as muted or as it really is a compromise between those two approaches as to the added burden on homesteads, which is typically the case because homesteads all of a sudden are much less favored class when you use referendum market value compared to the net tax capacity system, versus farms, which are the big beneficiaries of going to referendum market value because all the land would be excluded. So this printout sort of shows, and it really does vary across the state by district in terms of their wealth under the current law versus under the new referendum market value tax base, and then also it's also affected by the current level of debt in terms of where they might be on an equalization aid schedule. So that's a lengthy discussion of the amendment, but I'm sure we'll get into all that anyway.
Very helpful, Mr. Hines. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could add, and members, and I thank Mr. Hines also for adding the state average row on the very end of the spreadsheet on the bottom of the last page. I think that's helpful, as we looked at, and the group that we assembled to work on this met, I think, six different times, at least five, I think probably six different times, and Mr. Strom doesn't want to go to any more meetings. Madam Chair, what we recognized is the trend was in looking at these farm properties have been paying on I don't know if on average is a correct term, but about 10 times as much as the non-farm homestead properties have been paying. And you'll see that this bill with the amendment on it changes that to about 1 to 5.5. So instead of 10 to 1, it's like 5.5 to 1. So it doesn't put them on an equal par like the original bill would have, but it brings them about halfway in the middle or halfway from where they were in terms of reaching the goal of fairness and equality.
Thank you. Representative Dabney, did you want to ask your question now, or should we move to testifiers?
Well, it's on Mr. Hines' contribution,
go ahead.
So if I may.
Yes.
First of all, Mr. Hines, you indicated that the A2, you made the equalization aid formula more generous. And I'm wondering if you can, have you identified what that means in terms of more spending and the distribution of that? Can you assist me with understanding that at all?
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, or Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, it's been a frustration of this, the whole process as to understanding the cost of these proposals because it becomes, there are so many moving parts. In some ways, you're making referendums harder to pass, so that would tend to bring costs down, but you're possibly increasing the cost of equalization in the ones that do pass, which brings costs up. our little working group that Representative Drazkowski discussed didn't have any make any attempt to really get at a cost of the thing, and it's been turned over to the department, and we know they're working on a proposal on a fiscal note, but as far as I know, they haven't completed one yet, and so we don't really know what the cost is of these added amendments, or of the original bill or the amendments as of now. The changes that we did make were kind of more based on the results we were getting, and initially, basically, Mr. Strom and I had to come up with it, how to tie the old equalization scheme into this new program, and so we picked the tax rates that are in equalization 8 under current law, the 15% and 22% is it, I think, and initially sort of took those as to sort of see with the average tax base, sort of the average change between net tax capacity and our fair market value, made the same mathematical change to those tax rates. That was how it was done initially, just on a starting point of where would we begin. I think when we started looking at these numbers and started to think about it more and look at the results, we ended up going to the different two rates that if you could just see in lines 1.10 and 1.11 of the amendment, we actually changed those referendum rates to be the same rates that are in law for net tax capacity, except they're 100 times less, because referendum market value tends to be 100 times more, because it's not a percent of tax value, it's the full value. So in other words, we made them the same rates under this change, which is not the way they were in the original bill. And the same with the equalization levels, the same 100 times the NTC rate. So again, it was hard to do because we don't really know what the impact is on costs. And Mr. Strom, you want to add to that?
Yeah.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, I'd add that the real issue is who's going to end up passing additional referendums, which we just don't know who they are. And so for the printout in front of you, we assume everyone passes a relatively small one of $20 million, a bond issue of $20 million. And if, as Mr. Hines was saying, if this has a behavioral effect and discourages some districts from passing referendums, there's a cost savings. If, on the other hand, this has a behavioral effect the other way, where maybe more farm folks are willing to vote yes on a referendum, it may increase the number. And so that's really the rub of it all, is to try and guess that behavioral effect about who's going to be additional, who's going to actually be subject to it, who's going to have a referendum after this were to happen, and would it be more or less likely to pass. The department's working very diligently on this, and I'm guessing they'll get a number that's not huge in terms of the overall scheme of things, but compared to the size of the debt equalization program, which is currently about $20 million a year, it could be plus or minus that amount. So I wouldn't be surprised if their number comes in from zero to $40 million a year. But as a percent of levy, it's not very much. As a percent of that aid, it's probably going to be a pretty big number one way or the other.
So, Madam Chair, gentlemen, thank you. It sounds complex enough that once we pass it, we'll know how much it costs, it makes me a little concerned, but, that's just me. I anticipated, looking, Mr. Hines, I think you're responsible for the spreadsheet. I anticipated, even under the A2, the shift from farms to homesteads. The behavioral pieces that you're talking about, I've heard from farmers saying, if you don't pass this, it'll be harder to pass bond referendums in rural Minnesota. And then I hear from the school district saying, if you pass this, it'll be harder to pass bond referendums in rural Minnesota. So I appreciate that. I was surprised, however, looking at the last three columns on the spreadsheet, that it also shifts from CI property onto homesteads. And can you just help me better understand that?
Mr. Hines.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Dabney. What I think you'll find if you look at the business columns is that it's uneven. In some places it's more falls on business property and in some less. And that's really because of the two different effects. So businesses benefit by kind of getting rid of that 2% class rate, so that their value is the same as homesteads on an even basis. So that tends to bring their costs down. On the other hand, by taking out the farms and seasonal recreational property out of the base, that tends to drive the rate up for a comparable referendum. So depending on which of those effects is stronger in any given district, that will sort of dictate the net result for businesses. So in a heavily agricultural area, that taking the egg off will tend to way offset that 2-to-1 ratio. One column that you might find useful that I didn't mention in the original description is the third data column from the left, is the percentage loss of tax base, and loss is kind of an unusual term there, but it's basically the amount of tax base that's lost after you make the adjustment that they're generally 100 times higher than when you have market value compared to tax capacity. So in other words, if you look at a heavy district with a big number like number 81 Comfrey, 92% sort of means basically 92% of their tax base is ag and is basically out of the tax base now going forward. It kind of gives you some rough idea. So that may help to understand which of those impacts are going to outweigh the other in terms of the business property. But the equalization scheme is kind of a confounding factor that comes in, too, that can offset what you might assume.
Madam Chair, you know, as hard it is to run for office, it's better to run for office than it is to try to figure out, than it would be to have to be Mr. Hines. That would be much more challenging than door knocking. One last question to you, Madam Chair.
Yes.
The other impact of this will be increased state spending in property tax refunds. Will you carry that increased cost on the K-12 spreadsheet, or were this to become law, will that be carried on the taxes spreadsheet? Because it will be directly attributable to this change. So I could see an argument where if you're going to change it, you pay for it, is usually the way we talk around here. So
correct. I'll just say that discussions would be ongoing on that, Representative Dabney.
Nicely put, Madam Chair. Thank you.
So, Representative Nornes, I have you with a question, and we still need to adopt the amendment to Representative Drazkowski's bill. So I'll just, do you have a question pertaining to the amendment?
I had a quick comment as all.
Okay.
To go after if you want to make the amendment.
Yeah, let's just, if we could just go ahead and put the question to the members on the A2 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, so Representative Drazkowski, the bill is in the shape that you would like it. Representative Nornes, please go ahead.
Just a quick comment. I wholeheartedly support what Representative Drazkowski is attempting to do with this. I feel bad for some school districts that I'm aware of that are already in the situation for the next 30 years of paying extremely high property taxes. So this is a good thing. It's just too bad it isn't retroactive.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, disclosure, I'm a farmer, so this really would impact my situation. But it is a problem, and it's a complicated problem. A lot of it brought on by the rapidly increasing prices of land. So that third column from the left, Mr. Hines, is extremely interesting. But being land prices have been going up so fast, I'd like to know what year you're basing those figures on. Is that the latest year available, or what year are you figuring these numbers on?
Mr. Hines.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, we're not sure. It's either this pay 15 or pay 14. It's either last year's or this year's. We can't remember.
Representative Anderson.
So it's the most recent numbers you have.
Okay. Question, Madam Chair.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you. Mr. Hines, remind us, so that column that you and Representative Anderson were talking about, that's still what it would look like moving to 100% relative market value base, right? Or referendum market value base.
Madam Chair, Representative Drazkowski, yes. That would be, that is the other tax base and would be
right.
Be more applicable if we were at 100% and yeah. Doesn't take into account the change made by the amendment. Right?
It's just to show how moving to house, garage, and acre, full blown, if you would, compared to where we're at now, kind of compares. But the bill is 50-50 with the augmentations to to the debt equity aid.
All right. Do you have a question? Did you have some testifiers, Representative Drazkowski?
I do, Madam Chair. I think there's several. I have some farm operators and rural landowners here. I know Mr. Alberts is here. Maybe he'd want to talk.
Yeah, and I just so you can be ready, I have Mr. Busselman from the Farm Bureau and Mr. Peterson with the Farmers Union. If you wanted to be ready to testify, welcome. Please state your name for the record and proceed whenever you're ready.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman, committee members. My name is Dwayne Alberts. I am a fifth-generation dairy farmer from the Pine Island School District. Our family farm is located in Dodge County. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to discuss Amendment A on House File 596, commonly known as the House, Garage, and 1 Acre Bill. I hope to help change the way K-12 education is paid for to better reflect the economic and demographic changes that have occurred across rural Minnesota over the past 60 to 70 years. Prior to the 1950s, the small towns paid for their own schools, and farm families were served by the one-room schoolhouses that were located every couple miles or so across the country. As the rural school districts consolidated into the town schools, the agricultural tax base consolidated with them. Over the years, labor-saving advancements in agriculture have resulted in fewer and fewer farm families paying for a rapidly increasing share of the school district's expenses. Please keep in mind that I see this as a tax fairness issue more than an education issue. Farmers and small business owners on Main Street invest everything they have and everything they make in property within the school district, while most of the residents of small towns work outside the school district, shop outside the school district, and most importantly, invest their savings, their pensions, in mutual funds outside the school district. The school tax that these folks pay is based only on their house and garage, and all we are asking is that farm families be taxed the same way. Last fall, my school district in Pine Island, the voters approved a construction of a new K-4 school facility. There are farmers who barely qualify for federal income taxes who will be responsible for hundreds of thousands of dollars in school taxes over the course of the 30-year bonding period. This also affects small businesses on Main Street. I recently spoke with an elderly hairdresser who has a barber shop right on Main Street. She confided in me that her property taxes are $7,000 a year on that building. That's a lot of haircuts. I know that there are those who believe that the large increase in farm taxes is justified due to the increase in farmland valuations. I will point out that inputs needed to produce food in this country, such as property taxes, property and casualty insurance, workman's comp insurance, government services, health care, labor, seed, fertilizer, machinery, and land rent, are all priced at the high domestic American price, while the food commodities that farmers produce are priced on a usually much lower globalized market. I would encourage you all to vote for House File 596 and the A2 amendment. Thank you, Madam Chairman, Congress, and committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. Do you have additional testifiers? I think, is Mr. Busselman or Mr. Peterson here?
They are here, Madam Chair. We've also got another farm family, if we could.
Very well. Thank you. If you want to come on out down to the testifying table, please.
Thank you.
Welcome. Please state your name for the record and proceed whenever you're ready.
My name is Connie Neal, and I am the daughter of my 90-year-old mother, Leora Johns, who will be testifying here today regarding our family farm.
Madam Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to address the committee on the Family Farm Protection Act. I am a 90-year-old widow who owns and resides on a 243-acre farm in rural New Ulm, which is in Brown County. The farm has been in my family for almost 100 years. And I am the third generation to own the family farm where I have lived my entire life. I have been a widow for 25 years. My husband and I operated the farm until he died of cancer at age 64 in 1989. After his death, I rented out the tillable acres. The rent I receive from the farm is my primary source of income. In just 2 years, from 2013 to 2015, the property tax on my farm increased by over 36%. Increasing my farm property taxes even further, a special referendum to build a new high school in New Ulm recently passed by only 50 votes. The 36% increase in property taxes on my farm does not even include the substantial tax increase that will result from the special school referendum. Historically, the New Ulm area has been very reluctant to pass any special school referendums to fund the building of a new public high school because there are also two well-attended parochial schools or high schools in New Ulm. Parochial meaning elementary and high school in New Ulm, which has a population of less than 14,000 residents. This recent referendum was not expected to pass. On the evening of the election, it was announced that the referendum had failed. Surprisingly, by the next morning, additional 50 votes had been found, causing the school referendum to pass by only 50 votes. What apparently caused this referendum to pass was that the New Ulm residents were made aware that property taxes on their homes within the city would only increase by a small amount compared to the very significant increase in property taxes on area farmland. In effect, the fact that the family farm would bear most of the property tax burden to fund a new high school in New Ulm clearly helped promote passage of the referendum. It was no secret that the New Ulm homeowners felt they had very little to lose financially by passing the referendum, since the area farming community would bear the brunt of the property taxes. As a 90-year-old widow, I rely upon the annual income I receive from renting out the family farm. The farm rental income is my retirement account. The additional property taxes that I will have to pay because of the special referendum, in addition to the already high 36% increase in property tax in just 2 years, will impose a very serious financial hardship upon me at my age. The current capital bond levy system is especially unfair to elderly widows who wish to preserve the family farm, which has been in their family for generations. So I thank you for your attention. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Dunn. I do have a couple of questions. Do you have questions for this witness, Representative Quam, or for the author?
Madam Chair, no. It'll be for another testifier.
Very good. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it Mrs. Johns?
Yes.
Is that your name? I just want to thank you for your testimony, and you are a very sharp young lady, and you look nowhere near 90 years old, so thank you so much for your testimony.
Okay.
Other questions? All right. Well, thank you very much, Mrs. John and Ms. Neal, for being with us today. We very much appreciate it.
Thank you.
Welcome. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Fran Miron, and I'm here to speak in favor of House File 596 as amended. I'm a dairy and crop farmer in Hugo, which is located in Washington County. I'll provide a little background so you understand my perspective on this issue. I'm a graduate of the University of Minnesota with a degree in ag education. My wife and I have six children. Four of them are teachers within various school districts. One is a farmer who represents the fifth generation on our dairy and crop farm. I've served 20 years on the Hugo City Council and as mayor. I'm now in the midway through my first term as a county commissioner in Washington County. And I mention that only to share with you my perspective or my viewpoint, not because I represent either of those entities today. My wife and I own land in two school districts, and we farm land in four school districts. It's common, as Representative Drakowski indicated, for farmers to pay multiple times the property taxes paid by homeowners, and in my family's case, pay the tax without the opportunity to vote in that school district on those referenda. The house, garage, and 1 acre creates a balance for voters considering possible bonding questions. Instead of making decisions based on the tax somebody else has to pay, voters decide on equal shared responsibilities. The proposed amendment does some of the same things without the full load of the reduced level for agricultural property taxes falling on other classes to the full extent as calculated by the house, garage, and 1 acre. I want to impress upon you that the taxable assets that farmers have don't necessarily reflect on their ability to pay, as exemplified really in the testimony before me. You know, we're experiencing steeply declining revenue from reduced commodity prices that challenge farmers' ability to meet the increased tax burden. I've looked at farm management statistics across the state that identify significant losses for farmers in the coming years with commodity prices at their current levels. I want to share really a very personal story with you at this time. Having raised six children, as I indicated, and sending them through school, my wife and I applied each and every year for free and reduced meals. I find it ironic, you know, running, I think, what is a successful farming operation, to be eligible for free and reduced meals at a time when each farmer in this country is feeding themselves, their family, and 155 other people. So this really is an equity issue, and I share that story with you because I think it it identifies the fact that even though there are tremendous assets that are required to run a farming operation, the return on those assets is very and return on labor is very, very minimal. Madam Chair, representatives, I certainly would be happy to stand for questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Representative Dabney?
Thank you, sir, for coming down. I just need clarification on a little bit of your testimony and the way things work in rural Minnesota. You indicated that you own land in two school districts but farmland in four, so I assume that you rent land in two school districts. What I am used to is in the regular business community as opposed to the farm community, if you're renting a building or space in a building, the property taxes are a pass-through to the renter. The owner gets the bill, and the renter actually pays the property taxes, the owner does not. How is it done on those two parcels that you rent in whatever school districts you rent them in? Do you pay the assessed taxes, or are those reflected in your overall rental rate?
Mr. Murin.
Madam Chair, Representative, we actually own property both within the Forsyth School District and the White Bear School District. Mm-hmm. And so those are not pass-through costs. We live in the Forest Lake School District. Our house, garage, an acre, or our farmstead is within the Forest Lake School District. So the referendum that are passed by White Bear Lake voters, I pay that tax, but obviously don't have an opportunity to vote on that debt encumbrance.
I know.
I also rent land, other land, within the White Bear School District and within the Stillwater and Matamidi School Districts. So, rents obviously are based on costs and expected returns from people. I have landladies, much as the one that testified previously, and they're dependent on their rental income to pay the taxes and provide a return to them, in most cases, to live on. And so what we're seeing is rising rents on those properties when these debt encumbrances occur. And what I'm saying is, if you look at the returns per acre, the net returns per acre, we're expecting losses. So those rents become more difficult to pay. And we, as farmers, who need to obviously produce feed for our livestock and sale, those losses become greater.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, sir. But just to put a fine point on it then, the structure of the contract that you have for the land, you seem to cover most of the East Metro, but for the land that you rent, the property taxes do not pass directly through to you. They're reflected in the overall rent you pay per acre or however you structure it.
Mr. Murin.
Madam Chair, Representative, no. We do not pay the tax directly, but, the renter takes into consideration their costs and expectations for return, and those are passed to the operators.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Any other questions for this testifier? All right, with that, thank you very much, sir. Appreciate your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Doug Busselman. I'm with the Minnesota Farm Bureau. We are here today to speak in support of this bill as well as the amended version of the bill. We were privileged to be able to work with the working group and that went through the process of analyzing where this might be going to find a common ground that would be beneficial. Our policy from a Farm Bureau standpoint strongly supports a house, garage, and 1 acre, but we also think that the compromise that's been provided offers a lot of the benefits for agricultural landowners without always having as much of a burden as what was envisioned before on other tax classes. In rural school districts around the state, agricultural property is the predominant property class that exists. And because of that, in many areas, agricultural property owners, regardless of what the value might be overall, are still bearing much of the burden of that local tax that is necessary for these types of bonds. As was indicated earlier, we also have noted that a house, garage, and 1 acre addresses the issue of a property owner who doesn't live in a school district and doesn't have the opportunity to vote, or who doesn't have the opportunity to engage with the elected school board members, but yet they still get to pay the property tax. And so we're very much aware of that as an issue in terms of this type of a solution as well. Again, we support this this bill as amended and think that it's a very worthwhile approach to take.
Thank you, Mr. Busselman. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Busselman, I've often wondered how much of the ag property that pays the school taxes is owned by people, or the tax bill goes outside the school district. In other words, how much is being collected from people that had no vote, no representation on that? So has there ever been anyone to try and size what that quantity is?
Madam
Mr.
Chair,
Busselman.
Members, I'm not aware of what analysis has been done to determine that. I think for the most part the determinations of who's paying what is based on class and not individuals. So I don't know the answer to that, nor do I know of anyone who's been able to make that type of determination.
Representative Quam.
Madam Chair, I have been hearing this for years, even before I joined, that especially with the changing in farming to where you needed more and more acreage to run, it is almost more common to have a active farmer in 3-4 school districts and sometimes 2-3 counties. And, no taxation without representation is a, principle we were founded on. I'm not sure if there's a good way to fix it. I do know that this bill at least would say it's where you live is where you're being taxed. And I know the costs are tough, but I hope people on both sides realize that there are principles involved in both sides of this. And I applaud the people coming forward with a possible approach. Even if it'll be a long time before we get a solution.
Thank you. All right, and did you have one more testifier, Representative Draskowski? Welcome.
Madam Chair, members, I'll be very brief. My name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and we also support Senate File 596 as amended, and we appreciate working with Representative Draskowski and Senator Coonan on this legislation, as we've been trying to, something actually we've been working on for the whole time I've been with Farmers Union, and I think you've heard a lot of the good reasons. We just feel that it's a question of fairness and the amounts that some of the farmers end up paying. I think St. Peter just passed a levy this last week, and I have a friend down there who was real pro levy, really wanted to pass. But he said to me as we were leaving another meeting, he said, "But boy, do I feel bad for the farmers." He said, "Boy, some of those farmers are really going to get socked." And he said, "We got to have a better way to address that." And I think that this bill and Representative Draskowski's effort is a good start to that, and we appreciate that, and we'll continue to work with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, and maybe to the testifier from Farm Bureau. Could you give us the number of family farms that we have currently in Minnesota versus what we had, say, years back? I grew up on a small dairy farm, and I attended a one-room schoolhouse, by the way, and I wouldn't trade that for anything, and right next to our farm, but any comments on that?
Mr. Peterson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Detmer, I think right now the latest survey is that we have 74,000 farms in Minnesota, but the definition of a farm is a low threshold. It can include, I think the income is $1,000, and so that includes somebody like me. I live on a smaller acreage, and I'm counted as a farmer. But there's no doubt we've lost, you know, a number of farms. And but, you know, in Minnesota, though, I always say we have family farms. The average farm size in Minnesota is 350 acres. The average beef cow-sized farm in Minnesota is about 35 cows. Nationally, it's almost over much higher than that. The dairy, our average dairy herd size in Minnesota is about 120 cows, where nationally it's much higher than that. So we do have, as much as we feel like agriculture is getting bigger, and it is, we still have a lot of family farms in Minnesota. So this bill, I feel like, does help them.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House File 596? Representative Marquardt, do you have a question?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And this is really a tough issue. I mean, it really is. And the testifiers hit it right on the head. I mean, the fact of the matter is, you know, there is a fairness question here. Property taxes on farmland have really gone up. We've had a couple of meetings in Clay County, and in Clay County in 2010, farm taxes were about $15 to $16 an acre. They're now $40 to $45 an acre. And as Representative Nornes mentioned, the ROTC School District debt service added about $17 per acre for the next 30 years there, you know. So it really, and so it's real. And when corn prices were $7 and beans were $14, you know, it was livable. But now, you know, corn's going to be under $4 for quite a while as they kind of look ahead. But the real balance here is, because this really impacts small rural districts that have a high percent of ag land, and we need to make sure that those districts are viable. And if they need new facilities, I'm a strong supporter that these small rural communities should have the wherewithal and the resources to do that. So it's a balancing act to make sure that these small rural districts can do it, and also the fairness on the ag community, where it falls on real heavily and they don't have the vote. And we have, you know, in state law, we have precedents already with the referendum where the ag land and the seasonal rec is off, kind of that same reason, because of the fairness. But we may have to go further with other things, like, for example, equalization. On the debt service, that just hasn't been raised. Well, we did raise it just a little bit, I think, last year, but that should really, in the task force on school facilities, said to really raise that. And maybe we need to go to a different model, like some other states do, where you tax land based on production of the land and the soil types and the commodity prices and all of these. It's complex, but other states do that, and at least it would be more in line with commodity prices and production costs and input costs and all those things versus just land value. So just some things to think about, but thank you, Representative, for bringing this forward.
Yes. Representative Drazkowski.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Marquardt. I think those are very astute comments. And matter of fact, I you maybe were looking at a statewide number. I was looking at the Southern Minnesota Farm Business Management numbers. It was $55 an acre, but statewide maybe it's $45. But it's, I mean, that's a lot of money. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you. All right, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I got an email from a farm wife lady, and I believe she was from Amboy Good Thunder, which is down close to the Iowa border, and talking about a proposed bond issue in their district. And she said her taxes, or their taxes on their farmland, would go up by $27 an acre if the issue had passed. So it is a huge issue in farm country, a complicated issue, but the numbers are high, and as mentioned, with the farm economy the way it currently is, it's an expense on the cash flow sheet that's getting higher and more difficult to pay every year. So we should look at that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Kelleher, if you'd like to testify.
Yes, Madam Chair and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. And I want to start out my testimony by thanking Representative Drazkowski. He pulled me in early on, and he said we needed to look at this. And I think we had a series of about seven meetings where we got spreadsheet after spreadsheet, and we went back and forth and tossed out every conceivable idea at least we could come up with in that small group. And it was reaffirming that people could come together from different groups and try and conquer a problem. And I think it's a lot like how we work here in the House and the Senate. But we have concerns about this bill. We sort of went in with the thought that we wanted to make sure that the residential property across rural Minnesota didn't end up paying for all the capital levies, that we'd have yet another shift in the base. And I should be on record, I believe there's been a shift over the last 20 years onto ag property. I believe there is a problem out there with ag land and capital facilities. So I believe that there is a problem, and I believe it's a problem we need to address. And I've heard it from our membership that they feel very strongly in some communities that they can't get a yes vote and can't do what they need to do because of the cost that shifted on to the farmers. So I come from a farm family near New Ulm, outside of St. George, and I understand that it is an issue. This solution, though, as I mentioned, we have concerns about. It does sort of push it all back on the residential, and the last thing I think we want to do is have a rural problem such as ag land taxes, and the outcome of that, of fixing that problem, is pushing it back on the rural schools. And I think it's a bigger problem, Madam Chair. I think at some point we've got to sit down and have an honest conversation about school facilities, sort of what's our minimum threshold, because presently they vary greatly over the state. That's why we had the facilities working group. But that really fell sort of flat over here. So let's talk about that, and let's talk about taxes, because these folks who you've seen coming before you today have legitimate concerns. I mean, the idea is you support your schools because property taxes were stable over time, not that we clean your clock and make sure you never go into farming again. That was never the goal. And we need your help to fix that, so I'd like to suggest that. The other thing we also thought might be very valuable is a direct agriculture credit. Instead of sending it through a filter of school lands, maybe we say where you've got such a high amount of ag property in that area, they get some protection from the state instead of trying to move it around. So and we need to talk about all this in a very serious manner, Madam Chair, and I hope you consider that this can't keep going this way. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any additional questions? Do you have additional testifiers, or is there anyone else from the public who wishes to testify? Representative Murphy, do you want to ask your question now?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. From the first testifier, I want to understand better what you said about the woman that owns the barbershop on Main Street. She would be happy about this, but her taxes are going up.
Mr. Albert.
I'm saying her taxes are going up as I read it.
Madam Chairman, committee woman, with Amendment A on this legislation, it would affect small businesses on Main Street as well, and the taxes would not increase quite as much for small businesses on Main Street, because their small business owners are also in a very similar situation as farmers. They're paying property tax on both their house and garage as well as their business. And the example I used was a barber shop right on Main Street. It's operated by an elderly hairdresser and one employee. And she confided in me that her property taxes would be $7,000 for the coming year. And she was dismayed at how high they went up. This past year, she received notice of what the taxes were going to be based on the referendum results from last fall's election. And so, you know, the folks in town, the business owners, they're paying a sizable portion of the school tax as well. My personal feeling is that we need to have more property tax assignment on the residences, the typical residences in a small town, so that they have more skin in the game.
Okay.
Representative
Madam Chair and sir, you're clarifying that their taxes are going up. The farmers' taxes are going up. The business taxes are going up. You weren't saying that woman wanted this bill.
Mr. Roberts.
Madam Chair, if I could interject, Representative Murphy, the bill as it's before us now amended, actually, if you look at the spreadsheet, Representative Murphy, on the very last row, and I would like to not characterize this. I mean, we look at, you know, this proposal compared to the way things are currently, and the first word that people utter is shift. And really, I would like to frame this as we're looking at how proposals going forward are going to be treated locally, and that's what we're looking at. But if you look at the business columns on the far right, on average, under the proposal, they would actually go down slightly, or they're less than under the current structure, under current law. So it's, and a lot of that, I think, is attributable to the additional debt equity aid that's included.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Murphy. All right, thank you, Mr. Alberts. Mr. Lundell, and then there's any other testifiers, if you would come down to the table, because we do have a few other bills to get to today. Mr. Lundell, thank you.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell today for Schools for Equity and Education. I'll be very brief. I want to thank Representative Drazkowski for allowing us to work with him on this bill, and I would echo a lot of almost verbatim what Ms. Kelleher said. I've worked a lot on equalization formulas over the years, and I think about 20 years ago you'd look at this problem, you'd say let's just hike the equalization factors on the debt service and that would take care of the problem. But what we've seen is that rural Minnesota, the student numbers are low and declining, the ag values go up, the equalization factors are based on a per pupil amount of wealth. And so those equalization factors now are the per pupil value in those districts is just way too high. You just can't do it through the basic debt service equalization formula without spending a whole lot of money. And believe me, I'd be all for spending a whole lot of money on debt service equalization. But I think what Representative Marquardt talked about earlier is something that we need to look at. I work with a lot of districts, not a lot of heavy ag districts, the deep rural districts, but I do work with districts that have a lot of ag property or a significant amount of ag property, and there's a pressure for them to build. I think looking forward, as we move forward, looking at this bill, we'd like to see more debt service equalization in it to mitigate the effects on other property classes within the school district. We also think that you need to look at the deferred maintenance issues that are forward, because I think that keeps people from having to go to the voters for debt service, for bond referendum. You're going to hear a bill in a few minutes from Representative Anzels where the equalization factor change would work. And I think, again, if you look at these things, there's a wide variety of things that are out there. So. Again, thank you, Representative Drazkowski. We certainly look forward to working with this committee and the tax committee as we move forward. I think Representative Dabney brings a good point as to where the money for this would come from, and I certainly think that we want to be involved in that discussion. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lundell. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House File 596? All right. Any other questions from members at this time? All right. Representative Drazkowski, you get the last word.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. Just briefly, three things I wrote down here there, maybe to augment the discussion a little bit. Just a reminder, this proposal, as is, only affects construction projects going forward. It wouldn't affect at all the way things are with those that have already been built currently. And also, just to echo what I think has been mentioned, the situation for these farm families is going to become more difficult in the next few years, given crop price projections. So I think it's incumbent upon us to do something to act now. And then oftentimes, as we look at, and I learned a little bit about kind of the way the Department of Education is going to score a bill like this around their behavioral effects or their behavioral scoring of it, one of the things that I've heard discussed quite a bit in these local communities, the people in town, nearly all but not all of them, are related to somebody on the farm. And when a bonding referendum comes through, They talk quite a bit to their relatives that live on the farm, and so their behavior on whether or not they will vote for a particular referendum is influenced by how it will affect the farm back home that may only be 3 or 4 miles away. So something for us to consider going forward. But thank you for hearing the bill, and appreciate it.
All right, thank you, Representative Drazkowski. And with that, we renew my motion that House Bill 596 be referred to taxes, but with my intent to lay it over for today. Thank you very much for your presentation and all your testifiers. Thank you for being with us today. And I think if you are all right with this, Representative Drazkowski, I'm going to try to get Representative Anzell's bill in next. Representative Anzels,
thank you, Madam Chair.
Move your bill, and I think your motion is to re-refer to taxes.
That would be appropriate.
All right, very good. And so, with that, and it is my intent to lay it over for today. Why don't you go ahead and give us your presentation on 1641?
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. If we had a little more time, you'd hear a little dissertation about silk stockings and smart wool, but I won't, even though that is very appropriate to this bill. Members, I've learned that there are approximately 24 school districts located mainly in northern Minnesota and north central Minnesota in Minnesota's Lake Country who have as a portion of their taxable market value about 30% confined to non-commercial seasonal recreation. And that's a problem for these 24 school districts. These are districts that are caught in between having high wealth, non-commercial, seasonal, recreational properties, and in most of these 24 school districts, especially in the three school districts that I'm privileged to represent, Deer River, Northland, Reamer, and Pine River Bacchus, high free and reduced lunch, high levels of poverty, high levels of economic condition. So this bill would make an adjustment with equalization aid for these districts. And I am going to now ask my two testifiers from my Pine River Bacchus School District to provide you with real life consequences of this situation for their school district. This is Superintendent Kathy Bettino from the Pine River Bacchus District, and with her is her business manager, Jolene Banks.
Welcome. Thank you. Superintendent Bettino, do you want to start?
Yes, I will. Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, and thank you for having us here this afternoon. My name again is Kathy Bettino, and I have been the superintendent of schools in Pine River Bacchus for the past 12 years. And with me is our business manager, Jolene Bankston, who has worked in that capacity at Pine River Bacchus for the past 5 years. But probably more important for you to know is that she's a Pine River Bacchus alumni, so we're particularly proud of her and her achievements and accomplishments. We want to begin by letting you know how much we appreciate what we've received regarding recent legislation with regard to the local authority that allows us to levy additional revenues for our students and maintain the programming that we have at Pine River Bacchus. It's been a great opportunity for us. For many years, we were one of the schools you've been talking about this afternoon, one of the few districts unable to pass an operating levy. Our constituents' reluctance was not because they don't like the school or don't trust in the work that we do, but rather it was because of the related tax burden. The exclusion of seasonal rec and agricultural property places a large burden on our local residential property owners.
That burden becomes compounded when you consider local indicators. While Pine River Bacchus is located in the Central Lakes region with 45% seasonal rec property, and a referendum market value per pupil of $510,000 and appears property wealthy, the reality is that we have a 62% free and reduced lunch count. Our median household income is $42,000, and we're not the only district in this situation. MREA has put together the map that you were handed. If you're more like me, you do better with spreadsheets. If you look on the back, there's state averages, and then there's the district averages for those 23 districts like ours. The state average for seasonal rec percentage is 5.6. Our 23 districts average 42%. The median household income is $54,000. We average $45,000. Free and reduced lunch across the state averages 39%. Our 23 districts are hovering right around 50%. And the current referendum market value for the statewide average is $392,000, whereas our 23 districts are sitting at $633,000 on average. This makes most of us ineligible for any type of equalization aid on the local options revenue. My role as business manager puts us in a unique position when it comes to property taxes. I get to field phone calls when proposed property tax statements go out, and the school district's tax categories have increased. The last 2 years have been a challenging time in our district. With the implementation of the $300 board-approved referendum, we gained an additional $286,000 in revenue. Of this amount, 60% was local levy and 40% was state aid. With much hesitation and much debate, the school board certified the full $300. The following year, our district became eligible again for local option revenue of the $424 per pupil. Again, we had the potential for much needed revenue, but the school board was extremely hesitant because we did not see any equalization aid on this amount. We ended up certifying $395 on the LOR, and we ended up with $389,000 of new revenue that was completely local levy funded.
I'm sorry, and would you please state your name for the record so we can have that on the tape?
Jolene Bankston, business manager.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If there's one thing we can tell you about Pine River Bacchus, it's that we have an amazing community. It's a wonderful place to live. It's a wonderful place to play. It's a wonderful place to work. From our students and parents to staff to volunteers and our local businesses, the support is there for what we do at school. To that end, we have various initiatives and funding sources, and we are able to provide every student in grades K through 12 free breakfast every day. And we provide every student in grades K through 6 free lunch at Pine River Bacchus. We are not a wealthy community, but we are a hard-working community, and we are more than willing to pay our fair share. The inequity between the high-valued tax bases and the high-poverty population puts a greater burden on our residents, and we're hoping that it can be addressed. The enhanced equalization proposed in House File 1641 will make a tremendous difference in our district and will allow our people the pride in knowing they contribute to our schools without sacrificing their families' needs.
With another round of budgeting in the works for the next school year, there's already a discussion beginning at our local school board level of how to reduce our LOR levy. It should never be the priority to reduce property taxes and sacrifice what we're doing in our buildings. The enhanced equalization in House File 1641 would allow us to reduce the levy burden on our district families, but keep the same amount of revenue needed to continue providing the same level of excellence to our students. We thank you for letting us present today and ask that you support House File 1641.
Thank you. We appreciate your testimony. Any questions from committee members? I'm not seeing any right now. Representative Anzels, do you have additional testifiers?
So, no, I don't, Madam Chair and members. And so, members, at the end of the day, like all of you with all of your problems in all of your districts, I have problems too. And I want to assure kids and parents in my districts that they have at least a shot at a rigorous curriculum, class sizes that are reasonable, effective, responsible teachers that care about kids, and school buildings that are up to code and up to snuff, and so that our kids can enjoy the same kinds of things that kids expect throughout the state. This legislation with this enhanced equalization will be very, very useful to these 24 school districts, and I ask you for your support.
Oh, thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anzels, how many of these districts are in your legislative Senate district?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, you always ask interesting questions. Three of the districts are in my House district.
Okay.
And I think an additional three are in the Senate district.
And which district number are you? 5, 6?
5B, ma'am.
Yeah, and 5 Senate.
Yes.
Senate. Thank you. Because, Madam Chair, I have a couple of districts in here, too, and they top the list. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the question.
Other questions? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Nornes, you had an agenda.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to add, I have 3 on the list, and I share, you know, they all have good lakes nearby and very nice homes on those lakes, and it's been a problem for them, so thank you.
Madam Chair, sometimes lists work to your disadvantage, and sometimes they work to your advantage.
You have great allies. That is indeed the case, Representative Anzels. Representative Mallory.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anzels, we always hear about how silk stocking down here and how poor your people are. What percentage of the kids in your district are homeless?
Representative Anzels.
Madam Chair and Representative Mallory, I don't know the answer to that question.
Representative Mallory.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anzels, I bet it's not 20% like ours.
Well, before you get to Madam Anzels. Chair and Representative Mallory, I think we do have a partial answer.
I do know the answer.
Superintendent Pitino?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. I do know the answer for our district. It's probably, it's nowhere near 20%, but it is in the 1% area, and the number changes. And the definition, as you probably know, of homeless varies very often, because when we report to the state that information, homeless may be bunking up, doubling up in another home, staying in a hotel. It takes all different looks, but we do have that issue up in the north area, too.
Thank you. All right. Any further questions? And with that, Representative Anzels renews his motion. House File 1161, be re-referred to taxes, but with the intent to be laid over today. And with that, we thank you very much. Thank you both to Superintendent and to the Business Manager, Ms. Bergston, for being here today. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right. And so since we've only got a couple more minutes, I think we'll push the other bills again until tomorrow, and we'll start them off at the beginning of the agenda for today. Thursday, right? We've got to finish it on Thursday. That is the goal. So with that, I thank the committee members for today, and we are adjourned.